of covenant. The power of covenant. And as we start here today, and in this case, we want to talk about the power of the covenant of friendship. But I'm going to call it the power of covenant. Let's go to 1 Samuel 23. And one more announcement. I did not write it down. Jimmy Hale will be coming into town on Monday. They're going to try to shock his heart to get the rhythm right since he's had his heart attack. And at first they didn't think he had too much damage, but as they did further tests, his damage was pretty substantial. So they want to try to get the heart beating at a proper rate, and in a couple weeks may start doing some other treatments as well. But first they got it, first thing first. So remember Jimmy and Sherry. All right, First Samuel, and we're going to cover a lot of information here, and we're going to start in chapter 23, 1 Samuel 23, and we'll start here, in verse 15. So David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness as if as a forest, okay, or in a forest. And Jonathan's Saul's son arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God. What we're going to see today is the relationship between David and Jonathan. Okay, David and Jonathan. You think back now, God selected Saul to become king of Israel. And we'll talk about why that happened. But think about it in the terms of this in a more of a kind of a personal way. Okay, if your dad, who's one day from a family that has some money, doing fairly well, and all of a sudden, you know, he's a farmer, and that's where you had a lot of wealth in those days, the different land and the animals you had. And then the prophet comes and says, your dad's going to be the king, the first king. What would that mean if you're the firstborn son? It would mean that you are going to be the next king. So he had to kind of think about it. I mean, who wouldn't? You think about that. So this whole thing is beginning. And we'll get back to that in just a minute. But we want to look here where David and Jonathan had a special relationship. And it was a covenant between them. And we'll see the power of that covenant, that power of that relationship. And we'll also see the failure of Saul and contrast the two. You know, Saul was a disaster as a human being. But his son turned out to just be the opposite. And it's an amazing thing to see. Okay, 1 Samuel, we said 23, so verse 15. So David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life. This is much more into the story. And now David's having to run. And David was in the wilderness. Then verse 16, Jonathan, Saul's son, arose. Now again, this is the potential heir to the throne. Went to David. And you know the story. David was chosen by God to replace Saul. And Jonathan knew it. And yet, look at this. So he went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that. Okay, I'm not going to be king. My father's a grievous sinner. We'll get into that in a minute. But I want you to know that I have a covenant with you. God has chosen you, and not me as heir, because of my father's sins. Fine. And I'm here with you to the end. And that's the kind of thing that would take place here. So, let's go now to 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. We're going to cover a lot of information, so kind of, you know, fasten your seatbelts. 1 Samuel chapter 8 and verse 3. And it's, let's just go to verse 1. And it came to pass when Samuel was an old man that he made his sons judge over Israel. Now, we've talked about this before, but I'll submit to you that even Samuel, who was a godly man, he was not a very good parent. Because look at the kind of sons that he produced. And the name of the firstborn was Joel, and the name of the second one is Abijah. And they were judges in Beersheba, which would be a far southern area. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside to dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. They were crooked. They were bad people. And this was the prophet's son, and both their sons. And all the elders of Israel gathered together in the, came to Samuel at Ramah. Excuse me. And said to him, "Look, you're old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations." So make us a king to judge us like all the nations. Up to this point, it was a theocracy. We talked about that, I think, the last time I spoke. It was a theocracy, and God would instruct either through Moses or the various judges of the, and prophets down through the years. But now the nation rightly has learned that Samuel's sons are crooked. And so they respond in a very carnal way. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, "Give us a king." It's not so much that it displeased him, it says, "Your sons are bums." Sorry. But that they wanted a king to judge us. So Samuel prayed to the Lord. The Lord said to Samuel, "Heed the voice of the people and all that they say to you, for they have rejected, they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me." So this was an outright rejection of Israel for God. They didn't want God anymore. They didn't want God to lead them. They didn't want God to protect them. They didn't want it to be like the rest of the world. That they rejected me, that I should not reign over them. So that's pretty clear, isn't it? "According to all the works which they have done since the day I brought them out of Egypt, even to this day, with which they have forsaken me and served other gods, other deities, so they are doing to you also." They rejected you, they rejected me, but their ultimate rejection is me ruling over them. And he said, "Let them do it. Let them do it." Why? "Now therefore, heed their voice. However, you shall solemnly forewarn them and show them the behavior of the king who will reign over them." Now, we will see that this happened immediately under Saul, but then it would happen time and time and time again. And it has happened over the centuries. Let's see if this sounds familiar. "So Samuel told all the words of the Lord to the people who asked him for a king. And he said, 'This will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you. He will take you, your sons, and appoint them for his own chariot." It's going to draft them. It's going to be a standing army. So he's going to take your sons, and there's going to be a big draft, and your sons will work, be there for him. "And to his horsemen, and some will run before the chariot." So there's going to be the archery, there's going to be the infantry, there's going to be the chariots, there's going to be, the army. They didn't have Air Force then. "He will appoint captains over his thousands and captains over his fifties, and some of them will plow the ground to reap his harvest." So they're all going to, everybody now will be working for the state, is what he's saying. "And some will make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots." The whole economy will now be based upon supporting the king and all that he wants. Instead, now so this is what you want. Now, again, you study the history of any nation. Isn't that what happens over and over and over and over and over? It's happening. So God says, "Okay, you want to be like them? This is what's going to happen. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers." And even they're going to be drafted into this thing. "And he will take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your oil groves and give them to his servants." So that was a form of taxation. "And you will take a tenth." And now he gets even to more money. So you're going to lose valuable property to support his endeavors. Now, this is history. I mean, it's the way people do things, isn't it? "And he, then, verse 15, he will take a tenth of your grain and of your vintage and of his officers and servants." Why don't you wish it was only a tenth today? "And he will take your male servants and your female servants, your finest young men and your donkeys, and put them to his work." See? "And he'll take a tenth of your sheep." This thing's expensive. Tenth of your gold, your sheep, your kids, everything to support the structure that now will be built. See? And be his servants. Verse 18, and you will cry out in that day because your king, whom you've chosen for yourselves, they wanted their own king, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but we will have a king over us. We want to be like the world, that we also may be like all the nations. We want to be like the world. We want to be sophisticated. And that our kings may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. They said, okay, let somebody else do the fighting. He just says, you're going to do the fighting. You're going to have a standing army. They're going to tax the socks off you. You know, da-da-da-da-da-da. And they didn't want it. So anyway, what we will see here as we go through this now is this happened in a microcosm with Saul, and it would be more of a macro experience for the whole nation of Israel and for all the nations of the world. It happens over and over and over. But God said, okay, that's what you want. That's what it'll be. And so they did. Up to that time, God had, of course, appointed judges and prophets and priests, and for about 350 years during the time of the judges. And Samuel was the last judge. He was the last judge. And you remember that phrase, you read it over and over and over in Judges. What is it? Every man did that which was right in his own sight. And ultimately, it culminated in this event that we see here today. And it was an openly rejection of them. And God says, you know, they've been like this all along. They've been like this all along. All right. And again, I'm just reading a little bit from some material I've been reading. Okay, I've basically covered all that. Let's go to 1 Samuel 1 and verse 18. I'm sorry, 1 Samuel 8 and verse 18. I want to emphasize this. You will cry out in that day. When you find out it doesn't work because of your king whom you have chosen, for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. There's going to be a punishment for them for all that they do. Now, chapter 9, we come up and see the first king, which would be Saul. And let's just here start in chapter 9, verse 1. There was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of, and then it's all these kids that come down, his relatives, the Benjamite. Verse 2. And he had a choice and handsome son whose name was Saul. So, if there was TV, he'd been kind of very photogenic. He was tall, handsome. They might say tall, dark, and handsome. Something, of course, I identify with. Never mind. Short, dumpy, and... Okay, now that I got. Anyway. So he was this tall, handsome guy. And isn't that what people look for? They don't look for somebody with character, with honesty. They're going to tell them the truth. They want somebody with a facade. And that's why that's been for thousands of years. And he had a choice and handsome son, verse 2, whose name was Saul. There was none more handsome person than among the children of Israel. So God says, you guys want your own king? And you want to be like the world? The first one I'm going to select is going to fit all the criteria that are important to you, but not to God. From his shoulders up, he was taller than any of the people. Now the donkeys of Kish, Saul's father, was lost. And Kish, probably his teenager about this time, Saul was. And Kish said to Saul, please take one of your servants and with you and arise and look for your donkeys, for the donkeys. So it's a well-to-do family, and they're trying to find some of their property. So he passed through the mountains of Ephraim and through the land of Shalisha. When they did not find him, they passed through the land of Salem, and they were not there. And he passed through the land, all these other lands, of the Benjamites, but they didn't find them. When he came to the land of Zuph, Saul said to his servant who was with him, come, let us return, lest my father cease caring about the donkeys and become worried about us. And he said, look now, there is a city, a man of God, and he is an honorable man. All that he says surely comes to pass. He's talking here about Samuel. So let us go there. Perhaps we can show us the way that we should go. What do we do? How do we find these donkeys? This is their big important thing. And Saul said to his servant, but look, if we go, what shall we bring the man? for the bread in our vessels is all gone, but there's no, because he needed to bring some kind of offering to him. And there is no present to bring the man of God. What do we do? And the servant answered Saul again, saying, look, I have here my hand a fourth shekel. He had somebody who's going to pay him for it. And then we come down here. I just want to get through so we don't read every little thing. Anyway, the story that he's told, don't worry about the donkeys. They've been located. You can take them back to dad. But you are going to be chosen as the next king. You're going to be chosen as the next king. And now that's kind of a shock. You're a farmer one day, and you go down to verse 20 here. But as for your donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, don't be anxious about them, for they have been found, and on whom is all the desire, and on whom is all the desire of Israel. They've asked for a king, and now all of Israel is looking for who will be the king that Samuel will select. It is not on you, and is it not on you and all your father's house? And Saul answered and said, Am I not a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel, and my family the least of all the family of the tribes of Benjamin? Why then do you speak like this to me? Now Samuel took Saul, and his servant brought him into the hall, and had him sit in the place of honor among all who were there, and then he was anointed. Okay, he was to be king. Verse 25, when he come down from the high place in the city, Samuel spoke with Saul on the top of the house. They rose early, and it was about dawn of the day that Samuel called to Saul at the top of the house. Get up, that I may send you on your way. And Saul rose, and both of them went outside, he and Samuel. So, as they were, and I'm sorry to read all this, but I need to try to get this background. Verse 27, and as they were going down to the outskirts of the city, Samuel said to Saul, tell the servant to go ahead of us. And he went on, but you stay here a while that I may announce to you the word of God. And here he's told, he would pour a flask of oil over him and anoint him as the king. And so what would happen here? Let's go here to chapter 10 now, and we'll start in verse 16. So Saul said to his uncle, he told us plainly that the donkeys had been found, but about the matter of the kingdom, he did not tell him what Samuel had said. What's happening now, Saul is afraid to mention this. There's something now about Saul, and I've spent some time to try to get the picture for you. There's something about Saul that will plague him the rest of his life. He was afraid of everything. He was afraid. And he wouldn't tell his father what the prophet had said. He kept it secret. And Samuel called, verse 17, the people together to the Lord at Mizpah. And he said to the children of Israel, thus says the Lord God of Israel, I brought you out of the land of Egypt, and so forth. Verse 19, but you have today rejected your God, who himself saved you from your adversaries and your tribulations, and you have said to him, no, set a king over us. Now, therefore, present yourselves before the Lord by your tribes and by your clans. So now I'm going to introduce you to your new king. Him and Samuel had caused all the tribes of Israel to come near, each tribe, because it's sort of a ritual they're going through. The tribe of Benjamin was chosen, and he caused the tribe of Benjamin to come near. So they'd all walk by, and when Benjamin's tribe came, he had them stop and come near a family. And then it break down by family. And Saul, the son of Kish, was chosen, but when they sought him, they couldn't be found. Therefore, they inquired of the Lord further, has the man come here yet? And the Lord answered, there he is, hidden among the equipment or the baggage. He was hiding, trying to get lost. This was something about his character. So the very first king is a coward. The very first king won't lead. So there's some real problems here, and this would characterize him. This would characterize him. And yet, somehow, a son like Jonathan was produced in this dysfunctional family. Very, very dysfunctional. Sometimes children just look around, they look at the mess that their family is in, and they say, forget it. I will not live like this. And they make changes. Most just repeat the process, and a new generation of dysfunction goes on. And that's why when God calls us, many times we're the first generation to start breaking that dysfunction. It's a struggle because that dysfunction is deep in the family, into our how we were raised. And it all seemed right to us. But here we have Saul, and he would be king for 40 long, miserable years. He'd be king. A man who was mentally unstable. A man who got so unstable, he had demon problems. And he killed priests. He tried to kill David over and over and over. He tried to kill his own son, Jonathan. He actually went insane with his bitterness and resentment. And we'll talk about that as it goes on here. And yet, what a wonderful son that he had. And there's a lot for us to learn from this as we go through this. Now stop and realize, again, as we mentioned here, that when Jonathan first heard his dad's going to be king, and Jonathan said, well, I'm the next in line. Wow. And then when his father, as you know, all the bizarre things his father would do over the years, and God finally said, no, I can't use you. So let's go to chapter 8 and verse 20. I think I've already read that, so we'll just move on here. 1 Samuel 11. 1 Samuel 11 and verse 13. Saul said, not a man shall be put to death this day, for today the Lord has accomplished the salvation of Israel. Now, let's back up. Is that a good choice? Is that something he should have done? Well, we're going to back up here. Verse 11, we'll start there. So it was on the next day that Saul put the people in three companies, and they came into the midst of the camp in the morning, watched and killed the Ammonites until the heat of the day. And it happened that those who survived were scattered so that no two of them were left together. God granted Saul victory in this time because he did what God told him to do. Then the people said to Samuel, who is he who said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death. But Saul said, not a man should be put to death this day. So there were some who were they wanted to execute. For today the Lord has accomplished salvation of Israel. That was a good thing that he did. And Samuel said to the people, come, let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there. So all the people went to Gilgal, and there was made King Saul before the Lord of Gilgal. They made sacrifices and peace offerings before the Lord, and Saul and all the men rejoiced greatly. So there's some good things that have happened early on, but then things would begin to fall apart. There were various battles that took place, and now we want to get to... I'm not going to read that. Chapter 13. Now we saw he was victorious in one time, and in other times he certainly isn't victorious. Chapter 13, verse 1. Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose for himself 3,000 men of Israel. 2,000 were with Saul at Michmash, and in the mountain at Bethel, so 1,000 was with Saul, and 1,000 were with Jonathan. So Jonathan is now a commander, and a good commander. He's actually being groomed to be the next king. You already see, as we go through here, he's going to be, if he had been king, he'd have been a much better king than his dad. But anyway, he's being groomed here. He has 1,000 men in his command. The rest of the people sent away every man to his tent. So just at least 3,000. 2,000 with the king, 1,000 with Jonathan. And Jonathan attacked the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard it, and Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all of Israel heard it, they heard the trumpet of war, and it said that Saul had attacked the garrison of the Philistines. And so he does that. Verse 5, and the Philistines gathered together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen. Now, we stop here. There was victory at first. Saul defeated them. And now time has gone on, and now this next battle is coming. And what has happened is that the Philistines have regrouped rearmed and in times gone by and they're not ready. And they come now. You have 3,000 Israelites and they've split their into two, with 1,000 with Jonathan and 2,000. So they're really outnumbered. And the Philistines gathered, verse 5, to fight with Israel. They had 30,000 chariots. Wow. And 6,000 horsemen. And people as the sand of the sea. He didn't count how many there were, see, he says. And they came up in the camp of Michmash in the east of Beth. And so we know the story here. The men of Israel saw, verse, that they were in danger, for the people were distressed. Then the people hid in the caves and thickets and rocks and holes in the pits. What happened to Saul's leadership? What happened to, and this is a part of the military was doing this. And they didn't have very many to start with anyway. That some of the Hebrews across the over the Jordan, verse 7, the land of Gad and Gilead, such as Saul, he was still in Gilead, and all the people following him trembling. Well, this new king business isn't working out too well. We're about to be wiped out, kind of like custard. Custard? Custer. And some of the Hebrews crossed over the... Okay, I read that. Then he waited 7 days according to, over verse 8, according to the time that Samuel had set up. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, then the people were scattered from him. He says, wait 7 days and I'll come and I'll do the prayer and offering to God and he'll give us the victory. Well, the 7 days come and go and Samuel didn't come. He didn't say, I'll come during the seventh day. He says, after 7 days, I'll come. And he didn't come at the end of the 7 days. And you know what Saul did. So, and Saul, verse 9. So Saul said, bring the burnt offerings and peace offerings here to me. And he offered the burnt offerings. So what did he do? He usurped, he actually invaded the priesthood, if you will. One way of putting it, invaded the priesthood. And that was a tragedy for him and for his family. And now it happened, as soon as he had finished presenting the burnt offerings, that Samuel came and Saul went out to meet him that he might greet him. And Samuel said, what have you done? And Saul said, well, when I saw that the people were scattered. Now, this is excuse time. Okay, I may have done something wrong, but remember Adam and Eve? God says, what did you do? Well, I did eat of the fruit, but the woman you gave me, but she would say, but Satan deceived me, so forth. It's excuse time, isn't it? So that's what he's saying. And he's supposed to be king. When I saw it, verse 11, that the people were scattered from me and that you did not come. So it's really your fault because you weren't here when you said you're supposed to be here. So yeah, I did it, but it's your fault that I did it. Now you'll see this over and over and over in this man. He cannot take responsibility for himself. And you did not come within the days appointed and that the Philistines gathered together at Michmash. I mean, they were seriously outnumbered, thousands and thousands of times outnumbered. Then I said, the Philistines will come down on me at Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled and offered the burnt offering. So the people were leaving me, you were late, so I had to do it. And Samuel said to Saul, you have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord will have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for him a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. Then Samuel rose up from Gilgal to Gibeah at Benjamin, and Saul numbered the people present with him around 600. So he says, this is it. You've invaded the priesthood. You've done things that you were not supposed to do. And the old prophet was indignant with it. And I'll just refer you to the Numbers 3, verse 10. I'm not going to turn there. Numbers 3, verse 10. Numbers 18, verse 7 as well. The warning is given against to usurp the role of the priest. They weren't to do that. They weren't to do that. Don't take it upon yourself. And so you can refer to that. You're familiar with that. And again, the blame game starts, doesn't it? We've talked about that. Where the blame game is really there. So he waited 7 days, and then we get down to So he disobeys. Now it's interesting, and I'm just going to refer you to this. You can read these verses, these chapters from where we started in 8, go all the way to the end of the book. So I can't cover all of it, and when it gets too boring, you'll be reading it all. But time and again, things would happen that would contrast the difference here. Now, Jonathan, during, this would be a little bit later, because things were going bad, Saul, being the brilliant tactician that he was, told his 600 men, you can't have a meal until you defeat the enemy. So let's go fight war on empty stomachs. Okay. Well, Jonathan didn't know that, and the decree went out, anybody who eats anything will be executed. Well, the battle didn't go well, as you can imagine. And so Saul said, somebody violated the decree. We lost because somebody disobeyed me. Didn't lose because he disobeyed God. God actually cursed him and the nation for it. No, he says, no, somebody else did it. And that's why we lost. And so one of the officers saw Jonathan. He was hungry. Now, remember now, there was 2,000 over here. And there was 1,000 with Jonathan. They were several miles apart. Jonathan didn't know about the decree. He was hungry, so he ate some honey. And one of the officers saw him ate honey. And he says, didn't you know your dad said no one can eat? And if they do, then they're going to die? And you can read this for time's sake. I'm not going to get into it. So he comes to his father and says, yeah, I ate. You mean, and now you're going to kill me? And the people rose up and said, you're not going to kill Jonathan for that. So they're saying, we've got an idiot leading us. And they want to, no, you're not going to kill your son. He's out there fighting for you. And Jonathan was winning battles. He was winning, just he and one of his armor bearer went in. And by themselves, they went up these impossible cliffs and surprised the Philistines early in the morning. Probably as the sun was coming up, they were coming from the east, and so they couldn't see them. You know, the enemy couldn't see them. And two guys killed 20, and then there was such a disarray in their camp, they began to kill each other. So God granted them victory in this area, while Dad, mighty King Saul, was losing time and again and blaming everybody else for it. And as this would go on, you would see, and you know the story, so I won't read all of it to you, Saul began to slip into he became truly mentally ill, spiritually ill, in every way you could think of it, all the way to the point of demon problems and how they were affecting him. Chapter 14 now. Chapter 14. Verse 4. Chapter 14, verse 4. That's not the one I want. Just a second here. I already talked about that. Verse, is it 6? I got ahead of myself. I'm sorry. 15. Okay, let's chapter 14, verse 15. And there was trembling in the camp and the field among all the people, and the garrison of the raiders also trembled, and the earth quaked. Now this is during that battle. These two men came in, killed 20, and at the same moment a great earthquake occurred. Remember, God's fighting for Jonathan now, while Saul's losing all the time. And Saul's blaming everybody else for the problem when he refuses to see what he's done. And so the earth is quaking, and this is all part of causing them to go into great confusion, and the Philistines and the like. Verse 16, and the watchmen of Saul in Gilba of Benjamin looked, and there was the multitude melting away, and they went here and there. And Saul said to the people who were with him, now call the roll and see who has gone from us. And so he does all this stuff. So anyway, so he gets the victory. Now, chapter 24, we're still in chapter 14. I want to go to verse 24. And the men of Israel were distressed that day, chapter 14, verse 24. For Saul had placed the people under an oath, saying, "Cursed is the man who eats any food until evening, for I have forsaken, I have taken vengeance on my enemies." So none of the people tasted food. Now all the people of the land came to the forest, and there was honey on the ground. Now remember now, again, I could have told you this, but Jonathan was split. He wasn't with the main party. He had 1,000 men. And he eats, and so now, and he says, "Is she going to kill me for this?" And so the people said, "No, they're not going to allow that to happen." But always this blame game. Now, same chapter down to verse 29. No, I already told you that. But must I die? I'm sorry, I'm just trying to go fast here. Chapter 15 now. Chapter 15, and we're going to start in verse 14. But Samuel said, "What then is bleating of the sheep in my ears?" You know, and lowing. Now, what happened? God says you got to go and you got to kill all of the enemies. You got to kill them all. And when you do, I don't want anybody to survive. But now that sounds vicious, doesn't it, to our time? But you're to kill everybody. No one is to survive this thing, this battle. Let's look at verse 3 of the same chapter. "Now go and attack," from chapter 15, verse 3, "the Amalekite, and utterly destroy all that they have, and do not spare them, but kill both man, woman, infant, and nursing child, ox, sheep, and camel, and donkey." That's a hard order. But it was necessary. These people were incredibly evil, and God spoke, and this is what He wanted them to do. So Saul gathered the people together, numbered them, and that's what you do. And so they went out, and he had his thousands of people with him. So the battle takes place. Verse 10. "Now the word of the Lord came to Samuel, saying, 'I greatly regret that I have set up Saul as king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments.'" So this is again confirmed that we read earlier. "And it grieved Samuel that he cried out to the Lord all night." See, he was really talking to God all night about this. "And when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel, saying, 'Saul went to Carmel, and indeed he set up a mountain, monument for himself. And he was gone all around, passed by, and gone by to Gilead.'" So he's building tribute to himself. He's a great king. Okay, is he any different than the Pharaohs? See, he's just like all these other guys. He's an idiot. He really is. "And Samuel went to Saul, and Saul said to him, 'Blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord.'" No, he didn't. "But Samuel said, 'What then is the bleating of the sheep in my ears?'" You hear them, all the noises they make. "And the lowing of the oxen, which I hear." And Samuel, here comes a blame game. And Saul said, "Well, they have brought them from the Amalekites for the people to spare the best of the sheep and the oxen." What were these told to do? Kill them all. "Well, we're going to bring the best of the oxen and the sheep to sacrifice to the Lord your God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." That wasn't what he was told. It was conditional obedience. And it was always something to advance himself too. "And Samuel said to Saul, 'Be quiet, and I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night.' And he said to him, 'Speak on.'" No, okay, he didn't tell me now. What has the Lord said? Now, Saul's mind is slipping now, beginning to really slide. "So Samuel said, 'When you were little in your eyes, you were not head of the tribes. Were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord appoint you king over Israel?'" He started out okay, but then he went downhill. "Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, 'Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord?" You took the best for yourself and then tried to wrap it into spiritual nonsense. It's there to serve to serve the Lord. Saul said to Samuel, "But I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission which the Lord had sent me and brought back Agag, the king of Amalek, and I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites." You know he didn't do it. You know what he was told to do, and he didn't do it. But he's making excuses. But I did. No, you didn't. And the people took the the plunder, the sheep, the oxen, the best of the things which should have been utterly destroyed to sacrifice to the Lord God. And that's when he says, what is better? Sacrifices or obedience. That famous saying we see in the New Testament. So we see here just this constant battle of Saul and rebellion. And you know the story here where in chapter 16, for example, David's royal training begins here, chapter 16, where he's brought in, eventually brought in, even marries. Now Saul comes to understand that David is going to be king. Now, I'm kind of jumping around a bit. And what do? Saul brings him into the royal household. You keep your enemies near you so you know what they're doing. His paranoia is kicking in. So he's watching him. He's got spies out on him, wanting to know everything he does. Then he lets him marry his daughter. So now the idea is, now you're beholden to me. I gave you my daughter. You're here with the royal family. He wants to watch what he's doing. And David would play music to calm him down when he'd get into these demonic fits. Because what was happening was he was being consumed with jealousy. He's being consumed with the need, the desire for power, for and to preserve his authority and to try and keep his line going, and knowing that God says no. You're going to keep his line. No, your line's not going to continue on. And yet in the midst of all this, it continues to degenerate. And David has a hard time understanding. I can't believe your dad wants to kill me. What did I do? He'd tell Jonathan. And Jonathan says, you know, really, my dad is crazy in a fruitcake, and you need to be very, very careful. That's sort of West Texan generalities there. So they make a covenant. Jonathan makes a covenant. Jonathan knows he will never be king. I hear a beep beep. It may be my brain bubbling or yours, because I know I'm reading a lot. But David and Jonathan had a relationship. Sometimes homosexual groups will say, well, see, Jonathan and David were lovers. No, they weren't. They're nothing like that at all. But they had a covenant, a friendship between them. And Jonathan lost it all because of his dad's misconduct. And yet he knew God and he loved God. He was obedient to God. And he says, David, I am your friend. I will always be your friend. I will always support you because God chose you instead of my dad because of his craziness. You know, and all that he'd done. And I can't possibly go over all of it there. But look at chapter 18. Let's go to chapter 18. Verse 3. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. I don't know if you've ever had a really, really close friend. Not, and they may have been of the same sex. And there was nothing sexual about it. It was just you connected with this person. I think ladies tend to do that more readily than men do because they're relational by nature. But anyway, if you've ever had somebody that you're just that close to. And Jonathan took off his robe. This was a royal robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt. Nothing sexual here. This is, you are going to be the king. I acknowledge that. I am your servant. I am your friend. I am your confidant. And David needed that desperately at this time in his life. And so did Jonathan. Your dad's kookier and whatever. And just terrible experience for him. So David went out, verse 5, wherever Saul sent him, and behaved wisely. And David is being tested. Will you rebel or will you obey? You got a nut over you. What will you do? I'm going to make you king, so act like one. And he's being trained through this whole process. He's being trained. Saul sent him over the men of war, and as he was accepted in the sight of all the people and all the sight of Saul's servants. And of course, this drove Saul even madder by jealousy. Now, all that had happened is they were coming home when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistines, that the woman had come out. Okay, we'll get into all that. So we see here that there's this closeness between these two. So they set up You know the story, so I'm not going to get into all of it. David and Jonathan are discussing, and as I said before, David kept saying, why does your dad hate me so much? I've tried to serve him loyally, and yet, why is he... And he even said, I just can't hardly believe that. And Jonathan, as you remember, said, okay, you stay here, I'll go to the dinner, and I'll tell my dad that you couldn't make it. Just paraphrase it. And if he just reacts crazy and goes nuts, then we'll know that he wants to kill you. And I'll shoot the arrow. You remember? I'll shoot the arrow to tell you, you know, don't come over because it's dangerous. And sure enough, that's what happened. And he told his father, well, David couldn't make it tonight. And the king went into another one of his rages, his blind rage of fury. And why? Because he wanted to kill David. It was a setup. And even in this rage, he tried to kill his own son by throwing a spear. And, of course, God protected him. Can you imagine that kind of hate and rage? But the man is now, his mind is just so unstable. It's totally unstable. God says, well, you guys wanted a king. He started out okay. But as time went on, he sank more and more into this mental and spiritual depths. So when that happened, that David and Jonathan, they were now galvanized together. And they supported one another. They helped one another during this time. They had a covenant between them. So in that, now let's go to chapter 23. I know I'm jumping around. Chapter 20 talks about Jonathan's loyalty to David. I sort of covered that a little bit. Chapter 21, another issue altogether. David flees. He has his men with him. There are several times that David could have killed Saul and didn't. God was testing him, all along testing him. Will you become like Saul? Or will you be... Because he's thinking, I want a man after my own heart. And you know, David was that. But was David perfect? No. As he became king, he struggled with the same things, didn't he? He numbered Israel at one time. He committed adultery with Bathsheba. A child died because of that, and thousands of people would die as a result. So he still was, but he was a decent human being in the end. But he was a very human man. All right. Chapter 23 and verse 17, pick it up the story. And he said to him, do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I'll be next to you. Remember, we started with that. Now with the story, he's saying, I will support you. He's the guy who should be king, but dad was this idiot. And the family's under a curse. But there was this covenant between these two. Verse 18, so the two of them made a covenant. There we see it again before the Lord. And David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan stayed in his own house. And of course, they go through this whole process. He stays in chapter 24. David spares Saul when he, on several occasions, when he could have done, he just could have killed him, come out of the cave and say, "Now I'm king." Into that, but he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. And yet, Saul had no respect for the priesthood either. He assumed it for himself, and that was one of the big reasons he got in the trouble that he did. Now, we could go on and on and on about this, but I want to show you the kind of man Saul was. I keep saying Saul. Jonathan. Jonathan was. First Samuel 20, verse 14. We'll go through 14 and into 16. You shall not only show me kindness in the Lord while I live, that I may not die, you shall not cut off your kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord has cut off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord require it of the hand of David's enemies. Now, what is he saying? Even all of David's enemies will be dead, will you watch over my family? Will you watch over my family? Now, we see that here. Now we'll go down here to verse, I think it's 16. Will you watch over my family? So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David. Okay, we already read that. I'm sorry. So I won't cover all that for time's sake. So, Jonathan was everything his father wasn't. God called Jonathan to help David. And he responded to that call. And what he'd learned was in his life to serve the king, the future king, who had, you know, he could have been that king, but circumstances changed. And he says, I am your servant because God has chosen you over my father and his family. So I will serve you faithfully, despite what my crazy father is doing and the armies that will support him. And it's interesting, you find, for example, Jonathan's first recorded words were evidence of his faith. We've already read them to you, but we'll go back and look at them again. For example, I'll just read it to you. Come, let us go over the Philistine garrison. This is on the other side. Let us go to the garrison of these uncircumcised, that it may be that the Lord will work for us, and nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few. That's what he said to his armor bearer when two of them went in and invaded the enemy. That was the first recorded event. And this is the last thing that we have recorded in the scripture. When this shortly before Jonathan died with his father and brothers in battle. Here's the last recorded event. Do not fear the hand of Saul, my father. We heard this just a minute ago. Shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I'll be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that. He was a noble prince. He was a humble man, loyal and loving and eager to obey God, even at his own cost of his own life. He was eager to obey God. And the fact is, he died with his father and his brothers. Let's finish by going to Samuel, the last chapter of Samuel. 1 Samuel, the last chapter. Now you see, this is the end of Saul and his lineage. Well, not quite, but a good portion of it. Chapter 31, verse 1. Now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain at Mount Gilboa. Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons. So they have to kill the royal family here. And the Philistines killed Jonathan. Wow. He was with his father. An insane madman. But still the king. He honored his father by trying to be on his side. He loved David, who would replace him. Boy, this man is the kind of loyalty, the kind of humility you don't see very often. He's a man of real honor. You know, we don't see this very often. But the Philistines killed Jonathan, Abinadab, it's his brother, and Saul's other sons. Chapter 3, the battle became fierce against Saul. So they're killing off the family. And there would always be a corps of soldiers right around the king. No matter how bad, they would all just give their lives. And so they would kind of move like this. And various people would die, and they'd bring other guys to try to surround the king until it was all over with. The battle became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. They shoot long range, if you will. And Saul said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come to me and abuse me. To the very end, he's self-absorbed, isn't he? But this armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. I'm not killing the king. I don't want that on my head. Plus, you know, therefore Saul took his sword and fell on it and killed himself. And when the armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on his sword and died with him. So Saul, his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all the men died together the same day. And when the men of Israel were on the other side of the valley, so there were split forces again, and those who were on the other side of the Jordan saw the men of Israel had fled, and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came in and dwelt in them. So it happened the next day when the Philistines came to strip the slain. So they come in the next day and rip off anything of value. They found Saul and his three sons fallen at Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent a sword through the land of the Philistines and proclaimed it. Took his sword and proclaimed it in the temple of the idols among the people. They conquered the god of this king. Then they put his armor on the temple of the Ashtaroths, and they fastened the body. So they took his body and nailed it up to the wall, as they did Jonathan and the rest of the royal family. So this is how this man who loved God, who loved the new king, who would have been king, this is the ignominious death that he died. In all the verse 11, when the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard the Philistines had done to Saul, cutting his head off, taking the corpse and putting it on a wall, and all the valiant men rose and traveled all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall. See, they nailed them all up there and came to Jabesh and buried them. What an end of this kind of a man. You look at Saul and you kind of say, hey, he kind of deserves that. What about this faithful man? Well, the story would go that he had a son. And when all this happened, the lady who was responsible for taking care of him, she's in a panic. As far as she knows, David's coming to kill her and Jonathan's son. And Jonathan and the lady fell, and his son was just a little bitty guy, and both his legs were broken. And he was a cripple from then on. And David, long story short, David brought him into the family, took care of him for the rest of his life. He assigned the lands that were once part of Saul for Saul's family, gave that to him. And through this man's lineage came a lot of brave soldiers and some mighty men. So in other words, this thing is that God shows us a lot of things about the kind of man that Jonathan is and the kind of man and person that we want to be. And there's so much we can learn about his loyalty, his patience, his love for the king. And there's a lot of things that you might look at here. God sought him out. God called him. And he responded to that call. God calls us, and we respond to the call. Even though he was a grandson of Saul, he was under the curse, you know, that because of his father's stupidity. He still loved God. He still loved the new king. God calls us out of the world. Look at the mess we are. God calls us and brings us out. And in the midst of all this, he wants us to be faithful and loyal to him. Because he's called us out. And he wants us to learn that we're into a covenant relationship. This thing of covenant is so important, whether it's a marriage covenant that we read a little bit about this morning, a baptismal covenant. All these things are covenants with God, and they are important, and they're significant, and they mean a lot. And someone who has the Spirit of God in them, everything they do is their mind is, I want to serve God, and I want to make God happy by what I do, and God corrects me in this way, or he graces me in this way. You know, blesses me in this way. It's all God's in my life. He's working in my life, and I'm so thankful for that. To learn that kind of attitude in the midst of all that Jonathan went through, he loved God, and God used him in a mighty way. And one thing he did is to give David help through the most unlikely, through his brother-in-law. I mean, you've got brother-in-law, that kind of friendship. Maybe you don't have that, but anyway. So a brother-in-law, somebody who was so faithful and loyal to David. So again, let's follow the example of this kind of a man. And there are others in the Scripture, but a man that was so faithful and loyal to God, and that was expressed in his relationships with others at his own cost, at a great price to him. But he was willing to do that. And he even died with his father, who really was a reprobate. He was a reprobate. But because he loved God, he knew he needed to honor his father. And he knew, this is my time. It's time for me to die. And David will go on. And he knew his family would go on because he made a covenant with God, with David. We've made a covenant with God. And we know after all the trials we go through, God will see us through. And we'll be in the royal family with God to Jesus Christ and with David and the others that would be ready at the resurrection.